This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
Russell Dorsey, national MLB insider for Yahoo Sports.
I think Pete Crow Armstrong's good based on...
And he bet on himself to say, hey, you know what? I appreciate you guys for having the conversation. I'm going to play this thing out and then we'll come back.
Insider and analyst for Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus.
We're happy to have you, Russell. Can we get along today?
I don't know. You ask. You tell me. I'm always trying to get along with you. It's never me.
Why is Layla covering her face right now?
Because she knows what time it is.
It's
you're the one who's been starting.
You're a stuff starter.
Russell Dorsey.
What's up, Russ?
On 670 The Score. The Score.
Russ is here in studio. He is a man of many talents. He is the Yahoo Sports National Major League Baseball insider. He is also an insider and analyst for MLB Network and Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus. You can catch him on X at @Russ_Dorsey1. And he joins us in studio with sleeves.
Yeah.
It's May weird. 20th. Are you okay with this?
I'm not. This is the first time I've been in here with sleeves on in quite some time. Maybe ever. And not great.
That hoodie looks plush, though.
No, it's warm. It's keeping me warm. And it's comfortable. So man, we're good for now.
CAA clients getting hoodies over
here. All right, let's relax.
Russ,
relax.
Off the jump, who's keeping the Cubs warm in the ninth inning when they have a one-run lead from now on?
I was in the Uber over here, and I was looking at you guys' discussion, thinking about this question coming up.
You were about to ask it.
You know, thinking you would ask. I think you go matchup. I think you just go matchup with either Drew Pomeranz or Brad Keller and then just say, boom, there you go.
So a guy for any time, right? A guy for whoever. How'd you describe it? How'd you describe Brad Keller? The guy you want to call?
Oh, Brad Keller is my glad I called that guy guy. Like, yeah. He's a trusted and high leverage guy. But hi, I have a question.
Okay.
I'm an old, and I still am a person who believes that if you have a closer by committee, you have no closer, and this is not an ideal situation.
As an old, this is what I would tell you. That version of baseball does not exist anymore. Yes,
but I need to shake my fist and yell at a cloud. No, but I'm serious about this one. This one I actually do believe.
And I'm serious too. Like, that version of baseball doesn't exist. 30 teams would love to have a guy that say, you're our closer, but that's not realistic.
Can I blow your mind, Russ?
Sure.
I completely agree with you.
Oh, my. Oh, we got a first. That's great. And usually it's me and Layla that agree, but Marshall's with me. I just don't think, especially for your roster, the way it's set up right now, you don't have that guy. And because you don't have that guy, the best thing you can do in this situation is say, hey, what's the matchup in the ninth? Okay, we have two lefties and a right-hander coming up. We're going Pomeranz. Or we have three right-handers. We're going with Keller. Or the pitch mix that Pomeranz has, even though it's three right-handers, it works better for him. We're going to go with Pomeranz. Like, that's the way the Cubs are going to have to go about this until they figure out what exactly they want to do in the ninth.
To your point, Layla, I think you were absolutely correct when you said if you have a closer by committee, you don't have a closer. I think that is also true. Don't have a closer right now.
Most teams don't believe in closer anyway. Most teams believe in high leverage arms. Like, the term closer is outdated at this point in Major League Baseball.
It's funny, though, because I still feel like it is something that with some teams is very settled science. You know, Craig Counsell's Brewers come to mind. You know, Josh Hader was closing that door. Yeah, I get the same feeling in Houston. I get this feeling that that's the reason why Presley is even here now, is because for them that's settled science. I find it interesting that you're pushing back on this in this way, and I want to know more. Because I don't know of a playoff contending team that says they don't know who their bullpen men are.
Yeah, I mean, it happened. I think you look at the Yankees, made it to the World Series. They figured out that Luke Weaver was their best option. He didn't start the year as their closer, right? That was Clay Holmes, who's been one of the best starting pitchers in Major League Baseball. But Clay Holmes was their starter, or their closer, up until the point where he's blowing some saves. They needed a guy that was shut down. That became Luke Weaver. This year, Devin Williams, they acquired him from the Milwaukee Brewers, who was the closer for a long time. Devin had some issues this year. And Luke Weaver, hey, come on down. You're back to being our closer. Like, so you can be a team in the World Series and not have a closer.
But they still had an anointed role. Like, you're still talking about some sort of framework.
But you have to figure out at a point, like, all right, when it wasn't it's just going to be this guy. Like, they were kind of going through, all right, is it this guy? No, it's this guy. And then settled on Luke Weaver, who became one of the most shut down arms in the big leagues. But yeah, I just think the idea that teams have this annoying a closer. I would say there are half the league has a closer. Like, it just you're our guy in the ninth. Most teams are going to say matchup or high leverage arm.
That's that makes Chicago perfectly representative, because before this injury, half the teams in this city had a closer. And the other half was just like, if we happen to get a lead late.
Whenever we have a lead, we'll figure it out then.
We'll figure it out. That's the White Sox general approach to save situations.
I mean, unfortunately, it was Cam Boozer opposite of Rodriguez yesterday, and we have seen him on a ninth inning save situations. But I get it. I do think that they, being the bullpen, want to have an idea of where they're being used if they can, seems to be my takeaway. But I agree with you. Front offices are more than ever shuffling people.
I think, yes, you're correct. I do think guys like to have a role, but I think teams are starting to get guys to focus on we just need high leverage outs. And however we get those outs, like you'll have some managers say the save is in the sixth inning sometimes, which isn't in necessarily wrong, because if there's a runner on the corner situation with two outs in the sixth inning, that could be the ball game right there, and then you can have a clean ninth and then the game's over. So I just think it's the way baseball is right now. The label closer is not as important as it used to be.
No, which is funny, because even the payroll still is, in a way, when you think about it. Like, that's, I'm not trying to like push back totally, but when I have the list of the highest paid relievers, mm-hmm. it's Josh Hader, $19 million per.
Okay.
Then it's Edwin Diaz, 18.3.
Okay.
Raisel Iglesias with the Braves, 16. Presley at 14.1. Mm-hmm. Kirby Yates with the Dodgers at 13.
And he's not a closer anymore.
No. Tanner Scott with the Dodgers at 12.1.
Also not a closer anymore.
Taylor Rogers with the Reds at 12.
Also not a closer anymore.
Rafael Montero, not a closer, at 11.5. Mm-hmm. A.J. Minter with the Mets. And then Aroldis Chapman still getting the bag. He's 10.7.
Of the guys you mentioned, only the first three are still closers. To go to the point, you can get paid for being a high leverage arm.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. I just want to point, when he's talking about the situational, he's talking about the sixth inning, not the fourth inning.
Said fourth inning, but I was also in panic mode.
Yeah, she was.
I
fought with my man Brian Kinney last week, because he, in the reverse, he thought that Juan Soto, who was getting a day off, should have came in and pinch hit in the fourth inning because it's a leverage situation. I'm like, BK, that's crazy.
I mean, he takes all of the concepts.
He's a wild boy.
To the extreme.
He's fun to argue with, though.
Yeah, because he has points. He has points.
He does.
And sometimes you'd be like, I see where you're going,
yeah, but no.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
I would say this. That was the question you anticipated us asking.
Yeah.
Were there any, because we have another one that we're ready to ask you, but were there any that you anticipated us asking?
I texted Ray about one. It wasn't the Keller one or the closer situation. I know you're probably going to do your weekly question about PCA.
Oh, well, we have new developments.
Well, that's not even it's not the salary, pay him, which I'm still saying pay PCA. I'm never getting off that horse. It's where should PCA bat in the lineup now?
I was prepared for that one. Okay. I was, because I looked up in the Uber here. I looked at what his splits were as a leadoff hitter, and he has an 1100 OPS in the leadoff spot.
My God.
And he has a 975 OPS in the seven hole, where he was really taking off.
1100. I love the small sample.
I think if you're Craig Counsell, you at least try it for a game or two with him in the leadoff spot and see, because that lengthens your lineup. You could also push back and say, well, if you put him back in the seven hole, the lineup is still lengthened.
No one's putting him in the seven. Let's be very clear. No one's trying to put PCA in the seven hole, but I am trying to return Ian Happ to the leadoff spot because he can work a count. PCA is jumping on the first pitch.
100%, right? Like, if there's any flaw in PCA's game right now, that brother is not waiting around to see pitches. He has a single-digit walk rate, right? But you let him cook. You let him cook, Layla, because
he's
getting on base at a high clip, but he's swinging his way on base. So to your point, Marshall, yes, you do want a guy in that leadoff spot that can get on base at a much higher clip. Ian has been able to do that since he got to the big leagues back in the
day. He's got one walk in 36 plate appearances in the leadoff spot. It's not good enough.
The logic says yes, like you would put Ian back there. But like if PCA, who's hitting like 380 since he's been in the leadoff spot.
353, but you're close.
Okay. Like, and one game, is one game going to kill you?
Yes, because now they need to win these games because it's the freaking Marlins. Win the game. And so what I'm saying is put Ian Happ up top and move PCA to the cleanup spot.
We also have some audio from Jed Hoyer when it comes to what he had to say on Mullion Hall this morning about the leadoff hitter spot. Let's listen to it.
I think he can definitely do that job for sure. I mean, I think we have a couple of really good options. I think Ian did a great job in that spot. He sees so many pitches. He gets on base. I think when you have him and Tucker, you know, hitting 1-2, there's so much traffic on the bases for the other guys. I think it really helps. And then with Pete, you know, Pete's a different style of hitter. It's just he's dangerous right away. You know, the way he's hitting power, and obviously, you know, if he gets on base, he creates havoc. So I think we have two really good options, and you know, unclear how we'll go going forward. You know, my guess is that Ian will start leading off again, and Pete will probably not go quite as far down in the order. But you know, obviously, Craig and I will talk about that. But I think that the position has evolved. I mean, you think about, you know, honestly, how much criticism we got for trying, you know, Kyle Schwarber in that role. I remember in Boston, we got a lot of criticism for putting Kevin Youkilis in that role, and people thought that was kind of crazy. And I do think that now, you know, Shohei Ohtani, you know, is leading off, and it's not a surprise to anyone that you would put a huge power hitter, and this is a guy that's dangerous at the top of the lineup. And Schwarber's not doing it this year, but you know, he did it in the past with Philly. So, you know, certainly I think to myself, if you're a pitcher, you know, starting off a game, and you know, you're worried about your first pitch of the game getting hit for a homer. I mean, it's unsettling, and so I do think that that's, you know, getting your best hitters the most at bats, and also having some fear in the opposing pitcher right away. I think there's real value in that.
Okay, I did laugh also because when I heard Jed Hoyer say that this morning on Mullion Hall, I think he was thinking about what happened to them in the game the night before.
That's fair. First two batters, bam, bam, boom, boom.
But I do want to know what Russ Dorsey's thoughts are on this.
Well, he sounds like he's been talking to Marshall because it makes perfect sense. I will say the point about the leadoff spot changing over the decades is true, right? Like you see guys that were traditionally 3-4 hitters 15, 20, 30 years ago batting leadoff. I will say the difference is, like he mentioned Shohei Ohtani. Now, outside of being the best player in the world, Shohei has a 14% walk rate. PCA has a 4% walk rate. I would rather have the guy that's going to see some pitches and walk 100 times a year.
Set up the rest of your lineup.
Right, Kyle Schwarber. That's a guy that walks 100 times a year. Yes. I don't hate the idea of moving him down, but not necessarily back to the seventh spot. So you would go Ian Happ, Tuck, Seiya Suzuki, PCA.
Dansby.
Michael Bush.
Dansby, then Michael Bush, yes.
Yeah, interesting.
Yes, yes. That's exactly how I do it.
And that's it versus a right-handed lineup.
Yes. Like, to have the balance in the lineup, because obviously relievers come in and they have to deal with, and they, do we want to use him? Because
you're a left-right guy.
Not always, but in this, with the way this lineup has produced and the way they just hit, I'm most comfortable with that.
You can be a left.
You can be more flexible today than you could be, let's call it a month ago, with Dansby swinging it the way he is.
Yes, and that's my point. So Michael Bush, I mean, if Michael Bush produces like he's produced this year in the sixth spot, and those other guys are who we think they are, you're in really good shape. Nico Hoerner batting seventh then, and then you've got, who am I missing?
Well,
Miguel Amaya, and then Matt Shaw. Like, whew. That's a nice lineup.
You know what's bad about today, Marshall?
What's that?
I agree with you. Like, I don't like this one. Something's in the atmosphere. Is Mercury in retrograde? Like, this is
probably
this is wild.
I think it was about to happen. Ray, what are you?
It's that dust storm from Friday.
The dust storm.
The dust storm.
It put something,
in the air.
I need to know what early 2000s dance music fiend played Sandstorm during the sandstorm. I need to know if somebody did it. One of you will tell me.
This is back to you being an old, isn't it?
It is. It is indeed.
I like that you've tried to embrace something that you're not, but you've tried to like, put it out
there. I'll never call Layla an old.
Exactly. I mean, I've been old about some things. Closer by committee, yes. For example. Like, I feel like I sprayed all fields when it comes to certain traditional knowledges about things, or like appreciating Sandstorm by Darude, for example.
I just think right now, with the way things are going for the Cubs, they're going to have to. I think they have an identity, and this is something I told a little earlier in the show. Every year you wonder, what is your team's identity going to be? Well, the Cubs have an identity, especially with Justin Steele being out for the year, especially not knowing if Shota Imanaga is not going to be back for another 3 to 4 weeks. The identity is this: we're just going to try to outslug you and hold on for dear life.
You every night.
And hold on for dear life.
Yes.
8-7 is a reasonable outcome. Ideally, you want it the other way, but that's a reasonable outcome for their season.
And look, I think the benefit is you got one of the best offenses in baseball, and until you figure out the rest, that's the recipe.
I also want to follow up with you on this. I don't know that PCA is ever going to have a high walk rate because of the fact that opposing teams know he's such a threat to steal. You're not necessarily going to be okay with the walk for that individual. You're okay with one of the other
outcomes. Disagree with your premise. I think right now he's a guy that is a free swinger, right? There are guys who get into the Hall of Fame being free swingers. Vladimir Guerrero Sr. was a free swinger.
Vladdy Daddy
was one of the best players the game has ever seen as a guy. I don't give a blank if it's at my shoe tops. I'm swinging a bat. I'm going to hit a homer when the ball bounces off the plate. And so it doesn't make you an inherently bad player if you don't take walks. But you become an even more dangerous player when you take walks. Shohei Ohtani, when he first got to the Angels when he came over from Japan, wasn't a guy that just walked a ton. And now he's a guy that walks at a 14, 15% clip, even more dangerous now.
Oh, I completely agree. I just don't know if that's ever going to be PCA's profile.
I think the biggest difference,
he's got the speed element.
I would say the biggest difference with those two profiles and the way they line up, when you talk about PCA versus Ian Happ, that favors PCA over Ian Happ, to me anyway, is the speed element and the fact that 39 games, that's how many Ian Happ's played this year, he's got 3 stolen base attempts. He's 2 for 3. That, like, the threat of speed is there, but it's not prevalent. With PCA, if he's on base, that man is taking off.
I get you. I just, with the roster that they have, I'm less worried about it. Right, if you know that Ian's going to have a 360, 370 on base, and you have one of the best hitters in baseball and Kyle Tucker hitting behind him, and Seiya Suzuki, who's been one of the best hitters in baseball over the last year and a half, almost 2 years, I'm not worried about a guy being in the leadoff spot and stealing bags.
Okay, fair enough. That might be the biggest difference between the last decade and a half.
I do believe that your guy batting leadoff should be a threat to steal bags.
She's old. Let her live.
If I walk and we have a 2-run homer after me, We got the result.
Tough life.
Cubs hadn't had that kind of lineup until recently.
I want to go over some more stuff with Russ Dorsey. Rick Hahn was on MLB Network last week. Russ also got to talk to him. He had 2 appearances, I think, is what we figured out. Because there was one the day before you.
Wednesday and Thursday, he was either way, on TV.
And don't forget his first appearances.
It was worth
since he was fired by the Chicago White Sox.
And then Anthony Rizzo.
And then Rizzo 2 weeks ago. It was a Chicago reunion for me.
So Rick Hahn spoke for the first time since he was fired by the Sox, other than the statement. And then I know we talked about Anthony Rizzo, but Chris Chelios brought it up again in a more direct way on Sunday, so we want to revisit that with you as well. That is coming up with Russ Dorsey of MLB Network and Friday Night Baseball and Yahoo Sports next on Raheemy and Harris on The Score.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
On Friday, when you looked out the window and you realized that it was dark but it wasn't raining, I did briefly.
I feel like this is Russell's get ready song, you know? Like, he pre-gaming at the house.
It puts you in a good mood, I will say that.
You know, doing his hair.
Run a little faster on the treadmill.
As you put it up to 6 on the treadmill.
Woo!
6.
Just for a little bit.
That's a 10-minute mile, bro. I need more out of you than a 10-minute mile.
Actually, that is my fast. If I'm sprinting, it's like 8.
That's something
that's
I was
going to... That's a 7.5-minute mile.
That's something I was going to get to, Marshall.
What's up?
It jogged my memory. Layla, do you know I was like... We have for everybody out there, me, Layla, and Marshall have a group chat. When I get mad at Marshall here, it's not actually like mad. Uh-oh. It's for entertainment purposes. But I legitimately... Guys got mad at Marshall last week.
Was it as mad as you got when he called you certified pre-owned that caused our disclaimer?
I was actually I was never actually mad at that. I just thought that was a horrible analogy. This one I was mad at.
That's an honest analogy.
When you've got journalism majors in the house, the analogies need to be on point.
We were talking, you guys texted me mid-show about my breakfast, right? And so then I text them, Ray and Robbie, what I actually have for breakfast. Because I was like, had just finished. And I was like, yeah, an omelet, 3 eggs, 8 egg whites, 6 ounces of chicken breast, 2 slices of cheddar. And then
my
Marshall goes, that's a lot of food. Sounds expensive. And then I go like, that's all shade. And then he goes, I'm worried about you. I love you. Those were back to back, by the way. And I go, not a lot of food. And I said, why are you worried about me? It was $15. You rich. I want to be rich like you. So then I go, you're an annoying old man. Don't be worried about me for no reason. And he goes, I don't want you hyper-obsessing about your diet. When was the last time you had French fries? I said, Marshall, this is your problem. One, having a plan in mind of how I want my diet to be isn't obsessing. It's having a plan. I agree with you. I'm with you. I support you. I love you. Peace be with you.
Not the peace be with you.
It's, I swear that was it. Peace be with you.
I feel like this is one of those exercises where we could also read it in like disapproving mom voice and it would be the same idea.
I know we have important things to do. I'm just going to finish it up. Number two, I said, if you bothered to ask me before telling me I was obsessing, Marshall, I would have told you that for the last 5 months, I had a Dunkin' iced coffee every morning. I love French fries. I have some glasses of wine each week. I'm fine. And Marshall replies, I love your love for French fries. Whatever, Marshall. I don't love your love for iced coffee, but I won't yuck your yum. Get off my phone, Marshall. LOL. Actual conversation.
I mean, I just having a conversation with my boy Russ, who he just told me he doesn't text everybody back. So I feel very much
not with the swiftness that I text you back.
I feel the love. It's two ways. It's reciprocated. If anything, Layla,
thank you for giving me that floor, guys. I needed to get that off my chest.
You, I mean, in reading it back, maybe it did sound a little slightly disapproving, mom-ish.
More disapproving, big bro, unk. All these things could apply.
Well, the voice is even better then.
The voice was ridiculous. I did not text in that voice. My voice like it. It's more of a provocateur's voice. However, that would sound.
I think that,
I didn't read it as a provocateur.
That was a what was the inspiration
of that voice?
Yes,
that's just how I read it. Like it was just like, why are you talking to me like that?
Sound like I'm some demon that comes out to bother you.
That's how Batman sounds.
I think you nailed it. The disapproving unk.
Yeah.
That was it. That's the voice. That
might be. I just want to see my guy continue to have gains, both figuratively and really tangible gains. Because like if he gets gains, then he could take me somewhere to eat.
The problem was not the concern. It was that you said you were worried about me without like asking me my plan.
I worry
or
about Robbie, Ray, no. Layla, all the people in my life I am concerned about.
Nah, don't play that.
It's true. Play that.
No.
I worry about my fellow White Sox fans. I worry about Cubs fans. I worry about Bulls fans. I worry about anyone that I know, like, in my world could have problems because of other things that happen around them that they can't control. And I want everyone to get better at controlling what you can control and letting everything else water off a duck's back.
All right. Right, what? Because sure. Like you're not gonna, you can fool everybody else out here. You're not gonna fool me.
You think I don't care about people?
Is this like
I'm just saying I don't care. Like your little speech was cool, but like you don't fool me.
Is this like when he says he doesn't go out?
Right.
I go out sometimes. If there's an event, I'll go out. I'm not just going out to go out. I'm not. I left my house for three reasons over the weekend. One, to have brunch with former coworkers. Two, to go to the store to get stuff. And three, to work out. Those are the only three reasons I left my house this weekend.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah. But I went outside to meet the people as you can attest to, Russ, and you, Layla, if there's a game that I would like to watch with friends, I'll go out. If there are people that want to meet up and do something, I'll go out. But I'm not just like, oh, let's get in these streets tonight. Yeah, I'm not outside like that. You're about to be outside.
My friends and I were like, let's go to Wrigley after the game and see what's happening.
Exactly.
And then we ran into Dan Weederer.
Oh, There you go.
And then we watched Journalism Win the Preakness with Dan Weider, and I made Journalism.
Journalism wins.
Okay, so I'm glad to see that our group thread has been properly summarized.
Yes.
But go. Let's get back to baseball.
I don't know. I feel like there's more here.
No, we can do it after the break.
Yeah, okay. We'll do the more after the break. But Rick Hahn said this last week, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It was separate from your time with him at MLB Network. Let's reset and listen to this, because sometimes you find the answers to things long after the situation has ended.
We actually got off to a decent start that season in 16. I think we were 23-10 out of the gate, but it was done a lot with smoke and mirrors and on the back of Matt Latos doing an unsustainable early performance. And as the wheels slowly came off that season, I did a press conference at one point, and Scott Reifert, our longtime head of PR, turned to me after the press conference and he said, "Did you have to use alliteration?" And I'm like, "What are you even talking about?" He said, "You said we are mired in mediocrity." And that is all the story is going to be going forward, is that the team of the White Sox thinks you're mired in mediocrity. And that really was the motivation, because when I first got there in 01 and joined Kenny in his first year as GM, winning a World Series as quickly as possible and breaking what ultimately turned out to be an 88-year drought was of the utmost importance. Now, we obviously, in my opinion, we actually probably had a better team in 06 on paper, but we ran out of steam in the second half. Took a step back in 07 and then won the division again in 08. So we had sort of this little bit of a run where you tried to keep feeding the beast. We may have tried too long to keep feeding the beast and doing short-term gap fix on the free agent market that we could afford or that were tolerated.
Right.
And ultimately, that's not satisfying. So when we were stuck there in the middle, and not winning enough and not winning consistently enough, the organization, you know, we had conversations with Jerry. We were very honest. We were like, we need to take a step back.
Right.
We need to. Yeah. The problem's not the talent 1 through 6. The problem is the talent 7 through 35. Right. Ultimately, we had perhaps overestimated a little bit in terms of our players' growth. We obviously made some bets and some young players thinking they were going to grow into the level that we projected them to be and that they were starting to show signs of, which boxed us a little bit from a payroll standpoint. The injuries hurt. And, you know, the lack, you know, again, but more on the touchy-feely extreme, our culture had wandered a little bit. And the vibe changed in that clubhouse. And we sort of lost a little bit of that competitiveness. And, and unfortunately, that spiraled into 23.
That is Rick Hahn talking about what happened at the end of his White Sox tenure here on Raheemian Harris, along with Russell Dorsey in studio for multiple segments. What did we make of what he said? I mean, the answer at the end, the culture part of it, last I checked, he was in charge. So why wasn't he doing more to deal with the culture?
I think what we know from reporting over the last couple of years or just seeing it in plain sight, I just don't think at the end of the day, those things, everything was Rick's decision. I think if you got Rick in a room and said, "Hey, who do you want a manager to be in 2021? And how would you have done this?" I think it'd be a lot different than the result that we actually saw.
So Tony La Russa was in charge is what you're saying.
I'm saying Jerry Reinsdorf had a lot of control. I'm just saying that's something we knew, though. Like, I think you look at a situation where, let's take Rick Hahn out of it. Let's put GMX into it. And same situation, same ownership group, whatever. I think 10 times out of 10, the White Sox are going to hire Tony La Russa to be the manager.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was Jerry's call. We know that. But I think the issue then became, what's the end game going to be for whoever that person is in that role? You know, now that we know what we know, which is why we're looking back at it, I think that's why he was comfortable enough to say the things that he said, which still sounded like an indictment of somebody just not using a name, right? Because we do know that that affected the culture in that clubhouse. That was evident. Mm-hmm. The problem is there's a dissonance because we still respect his office in Rick Hahn's. We still give the manager, Tony La Russa, the respect that he has earned, especially in his career, right? That was a big part of this. So then, once you knew that you had been usurped like that by your owner, when you hadn't been before, now that we know the end result, I wonder if that was the time where you should have cut bait. Yeah, that's the issue. It's like, do you need a new GM then, knowing what you know? There's protecting yourself, there's protecting the team, and there's knowing when it's protecting the team to protect you, and then vice versa.
Well, I say no because, one, if you're saying Jerry Reinsdorf should have cut bait with Rick back then.
No, I'm wondering if Rick should have quit.
Well, I would say no GM is going to quit in any sport. There are only 30 jobs in baseball to be a GM. You're not going to walk away. You're going to try to make chicken salad out of chicken blank. And if you look back at the 2021 White Sox, you had people picking them to go and win the World Series. Like, that wasn't a bad baseball team. They just made a bad move to hire, as you know, the manager they decided to hire. If they hire A.J. Hinch, maybe the story is completely different. Maybe that team doesn't turn into what it turned into. At the end of the day, they had players that they believed in, that they thought was their core, that end up not being good players, and they were in and out of their window so quickly, nothing else mattered.
That window slammed shut.
Are you surprised that he hasn't gotten a job yet somewhere else in baseball?
No, because I know from talking to him, one of the things I can share is he, you know, this is his first time, you know, out in public since he got fired. And he told me, hey, this is the first summer I've had off or summers I've had off in 15 years.
And he likes it.
And he's was just enjoying being away from the game. And he said the first thing he did, him and his family went to Paris and saw Taylor Swift. And, you know, that's baller. You know
Rick
what I mean?
Hahn was at the Eras Tour in Paris.
That's what happened.
I know he was front row at the Texans and Bears game because he got put on TV.
He's the Chicago guy. He's going to stay out in the Chicago sports mix. But, like, I think for when you've been in, we'll call it Jerry World, for so long.
Very different Jerry World.
Maybe, you know, I guess getting fired probably leaves a bad taste in anybody's mouth. And so you need time away. I just think for him, it was just like, hey. And he said he's going to see what, you know, he likes. He's not rushed into anything.
He's not pressed.
No, he's not.
He's not pressed
so
at the end of the day.
So he's following one of your dating rules.
He should. He should. Don't be pressed. Don't be pressed. Let the game come to you. First, get some game, but then let the game come to you.
I feel like he does that.
Good for him.
He's chilling.
I was curious about that piece of it. The fact that, you know, he could be in baseball somewhere else.
I think he's weighing all his options and whatever happens, happens.
Like Russ with these ladies. I got you.
All right. Get us to break, Layla, please.
What? Do you want to hang with us for the next second?
Yeah. Because I have one more thing I got to get off my chest.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And now it is time for a new segment we're calling Are We Still Doing This with Russ Dorsey?
Oh,
part three is next on Raheem and Harris on the Score.
You're listening to Raheem and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Oh, did you ever hear the backstory on this song, Marshall?
No, what's the backstory?
That supposedly it was recorded at Club Egypt in Philly.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I know the club, but I did not know that.
I bet you do.
Yo, chill. Don't try to project your life onto mine.
I lived near the former site of Club Egypt.
Shaking it.
That's the voice of Russell Dorsey joining us here on Raheem and Harris. He decided to stick around for a third segment.
Here we go now.
I don't know if that's what we should be doing, but he's here already. So I was like, I guess. Because he said, I have something else to get to. What'd you want to get to, Russ?
Okay. Whoa. A little aggressive there, Marshall Harris.
I feel like you were
dancing and everything.
I was going to ask. Yeah, I was getting my little shimmy off.
It's a good song.
Can we define a thirst trap? Because I feel like in today's day and age,
oh my goodness,
we just label anything.
Can
a
you
thirst
tweet
trap.
Out that picture?
And no. I don't think I should.
See, and that's how you know it's a thirst trap.
That's how you know it's a thirst trap.
I keep the things that I put on my Instagram are different from the things I put on my Twitter.
Let's get
my
people,
Twitter is almost 98% professional, 1% other, 1% Bears.
What
Twitter.
Is your Russell?
The other one. Hear me out, Marshall. Before you jumping in. My Instagram is more my personal life, personality, workout stuff. And so that's what it's going to be on my Instagram.
Okay, what's your handle on Instagram? This is a directive to everyone right now.
It's gone, though. At Russ underscore Dorsey.
Wait, why is it gone?
Because it was on my Instagram story.
But it expired already?
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
But if you go, all right, you want me to, if you go to Instagram and then you go to the highlights on my Instagram, there's a section with three flexing biceps, And if you go to the third slide, it's what I put on my Instagram.
And this is by definition, at least Layla Rahimi's definition, because tell Russell what you said in the pre-show meeting today.
I was like, oh, Russ posted a thirst trap this morning on the gram.
It wasn't a thirst trap.
Russ, you have an 8-pack.
Right, but that's a progress photo.
Oh, progress.
Yes. Okay. Like, what's the difference between somebody who's been working really hard to get their body in peak shred condition and posting the progress of that? Like, how is that?
Because it wasn't a before and after side by side.
There's only one person we all know who can be the judge of this.
Who's that?
Clay.
Oh, yeah. You're you know what?
Gaines
you're in Clay
have
Harbor
to
territory.
Talk to Gaines.
Yeah, you're in Clay Harbor territory.
No.
I think
I
you
push
are.
Back a lot against that. I can't say why, but Marshall, I'm pushing back against that.
I know why, and that's what makes it hilarious.
Because you know I can't say what I want. Shout out to Clay.
But
no, I don't think it's bad to post a progress photo on my Instagram, and I don't think it's fair to call it a thirst trap.
I think they can be both.
Yeah.
I think if somebody goes from, you know, bulking to going into a super cut and go from 260 to 215, and they
is
have...
Is that where you're at now, 215?
Mm-hmm.
My word.
And you have abs that are popping out.
When was the last time you saw your abs before this phase
there,
of your life?
They were there.
No, I'm saying, when was the last time you could clearly see them as you can now?
2 years ago.
Okay, so that existed. And then you fell off.
It wasn't like I was just like a blob, but it was just like I've been like super mindful.
I know
to,
that's
like,
why that's why that, that what, that's why that text happened. The text exchange we had.
Then what is a thirst trap to you?
Yeah, what is a thirst trap to
what
you?
What is a Russ Dorsey thirst trap?
Oh, Marshall, because I can't say it. So to me, a thirst trap is when you are posting something with the only goal being others' attention. And reaction to
you didn't
it.
Want any attention to
I
posted,
didn't post
posted
that
social media story
at all for other people. I posted it for me because I'm very proud of the progress I've made in 6 months.
But if you just posted it for you, you could have just had the picture and looked at it when you wanted to. You didn't have to post it on social media.
They're also, but people also know, like, good I'm argument. Very big into fitness, and I put that on my Instagram regularly.
Okay.
Marshall, did you know before yesterday that I was really big into fitness?
I'm going to let you have it.
Exactly.
I'm going to let you have it. No, because I knew that, but other people might not know that.
Guys, all right, I'm torn here.
Yeah, no, you're not.
Because here's my thing. I think I found a way to say what I wanted to say to you earlier.
I think the result is the result.
I chose the pants that I had on in the picture for a reason, because they were black. If I came through in that IG story with gray... That would be a thirst trap.
Like the gray sweats?
Exactly.
The way
there was a reason I chose what I chose.
The way we all just proceeded to move around.
Okay, so if you
I
if
just
you're
saw a texter say, I don't be reading the messages, but said the intention does not matter. Traps are traps. I don't agree with you, 773.
Oh my God. We got Russ reading the text line. It's official.
Yeah,
you're part of the show.
But do you hear me when I say it? Like, if I intentionally in my head said, nah, I'm going to give him the gray sweats today, that's 100%. Trying to be a thirst trap. I put on black sweats because it's going to be PG-13. It ain't going to be X or
so,
R.
So for people who don't understand what gray sweats and the implication is when you say gray sweats and put on gray sweats, how would you explain that
no,
to the listener?
No.
I can do it and I won't get a call from Mitch. I think if you put black sweats on like I had on yesterday, there is no visibility from ab down, right? Right, like if I had on gray sweats.
Mitch has now entered the control
their
room.
There shows more.
Definition?
Dump them.
Definition?
Meat? Can I say that?
No!
I can't say that.
The key phrase would have been gains.
Yeah, just gains. Gains would have sufficed there. Survey says. Wow. Okay.
Mitch, by the way, Rosen came in to make sure
Mitch
everything was
man.
Okay.
Mitch, I'm sorry if you get a call from the FCC or
no, you're fine.
Whoever controls these.
414, you are correct. This has become a sports adjacent episode.
100%.
I love it. I miss that show so much.
630, I think the Russ Dorsey segment is my new favorite segment. Hey, man, I appreciate that. I just like hanging out with my friends.
What about 630? Y'all are talking like thirst traps are bad things. I thought this was the no kink shaming show.
I never said it was bad. I was trying to compliment Russ.
Lawrence Holmes wants you to know that that's the Spiegel and Holmes show is the no kink shaming show.
Yeah,
but I have claimed ownership of that.
Hey, I don't shame anybody's yum when it comes to that. But all I'm saying
is... you're out here trying to show off the yums.
No, I'm trying to show the progress. Because I think, guys, we don't have... I hate doing this, but like... Dudes don't always get the opportunity to, like, be confident in who they are.
That is
and
true.
I'm just trying to be confident in where I am from a health and fitness standpoint because I've worked really hard at it.
Okay, so if I also do that?
I'd be fully supportive of you. I wouldn't text you talking about, here you go, thirst trapping, like you be doing. I'd be like, hell yeah, Marshall. Get it off.
I can't with your fake voices. They're the best thing from today.
The print. That's what you should have said. The print.
But see, I thought that would be pants. A little bit.
It's just print.
I don't know.
You're print journalist, but digital.
I don't know about any of this.
I think you do.
I think your gray pants just was enough for you. But
Ayo,
I still think
pause. Pause is an all caps.
Ayo, pause is hilarious.
I still think this is a thirst trap. That's the entire text.
Anyway,
bro, who is talking about me? Just turn on the radio. I need to back up on what's going on.
Anyway, what's that handle again so they can go check out your...
And the highlight has three flexing arms.
At @Russ_Dorsey. If you want to see the picture that we're talking about, go to my Instagram, go to the highlight with the three flexing arms, and go to the third slide.
I'm interested to see what they say in response to that. I can't wait to talk to you next week.
Ray, did you see it yesterday?
Yesterday, I did not see that one. Right. I did see the one in question today.
What is your thoughts?
It's a thirst trap. He was with us.
Hey, man, I gotta say, I did think it was a thirst trap, but your definition on color of pants, you've won me over.
Thank you.
You've won me over.
Like, there is choice there. The...
We gotta do transition. Russell Dorsey, he of the Yahoo Sports National MLB Insider role, an insider and analyst for MLB Network, and Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus, and a regular contributor here on the Raheem and Harris Show. We appreciate you stopping by, Russ, as always.
I love stopping by, friends.
Oh my, I do too. I just your parents listen, man.
That's the one part. This segment is sucio. See.
Stop.
Oh, I can't. I can't wait.
Layla, get us out of here.
Lawrence and Matt Spiegel are up next.